Good morning. This is Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. At Right Choice Services, we develop individualized programs to help clients find that book inside of them they have always wanted to write. I'm your host, Tim Morrison. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the writing they engage in as a part of their work. My co-host and the producer of Right Here, Right Now is Kevin Finn. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Dr. Tim. How are you doing today?
I am doing great. How about you?
I'm doing awesome. This has been a really good morning. Nice and easy.
That's great. How did you feel about the BRX mixer last week?
It was a lot of fun. Good appetizers. No one ate the chicken wings because no one wanted to eat greasy chicken wings and then shake people's hands. So yeah, I took that upon myself to take those out of the equation so people didn't have that dilemma.
I was going to say, I think I remember them bringing out an extra plate or two. Now, I agree. I did not do that. I had the sandwiches. But it was a good gathering.
It was a great gathering. We had like over 100 people. So.
And it's one of the benefits of being on a BRX radio show is you get invited to those things.
Exactly. That's one of the many perks.
Yeah, many, many, many. I think I'm going to dive into the show. What do you say?
I'm really excited. You seem to have two beautiful, lovely guests, and they seem very excited and awesome.
Well, they were on the Alpharetta Studio show when I had it there, and they were the last guests to appear there. And so then I moved down here because I knew if I had them back, I had to have a classier studio.
I'm surprised they came back after Alpharetta.
Me too. Well, and it was on September 25th of this year that I interviewed Deborah Tyler and Peggy Sue Marquez Kelly, who are managing partners of CETA Inc. And at that time, we discussed change management, which is CETA Inc.'s specialty. Peggy Sue and Deborah are back in the studio for another conversation. We're really glad that Peggy Sue's here. She started out yesterday in Minnesota with 16 inches of snow, made it down here.
Last flight out.
Well, kind of like early this morning, right? And she's here, and I've been chuckling. We met for breakfast, Kevin, and she came walking in just as she is now attired, and I'm looking around the restaurant, and these southern people have their heavy mucklucks on, and Peggy thinks we're in sunbathing weather.
It is. Minnesota hits below zero normally. This is sunbathing weather. Suck it up. It's all right.
Yeah, there you go. Well, they're back in the studio. We're going to be talking about the healthcare industry because healthcare industry certainly faces unprecedented challenges. As hospitals, medical centers, healthcare organizations, medical professionals try to figure out how they will address the demand for greater quality of care while facing a pressure to lower operational costs, all the while having to meet quality performance metrics. Sounds like heavy stuff. In our earlier conversation, Peggy Sue and Deborah said this is sort of like a perfect storm. Now, we attempted something last week, and nobody took us up on it. We're going to try it again today. This is for those of you who are listening live. If you want to give us a question for Deborah or Peggy Sue, please do so by emailing your question to whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com, and I'll ask it of them. If you're listening to the MP3 download, having spoken with Deborah and Peggy Sue earlier, if you want to email your question to me, I'll forward it and get back to you, see what they have to say. Well, with all of that, welcome, Deborah and Peggy Sue.
Thank you.
Thanks, good to have you. It's good to have you back.
And we didn't care what studio we were in, Tim. It's all about you.
Oh. I like that.
They know exactly what to say.
Yes, they do. They're good. They're good. All right. Well, you know, I mentioned that you guys, your company is good at change management, you combine it as change management, project management. You look at the project, you look at people, you put it all there, right?
Yes.
Exactly.
Do I have it?
Absolutely.
We got it. Well, here we go with our first toss-up question. Describe the perfect storm that the healthcare industry faces. What do you see that as being?
Well, you know, Tim, the healthcare industry, the magnitude of change that they're facing with the Affordable Care Act has not been seen since 1965. That was a little bit before I was born, right around that time.
Oh, hurt me.
Not much, but a little bit.
I was getting my driver's license.
So since 1965, when you had to deal with Medicare and Medicaid, right, and the magnitude of that change was significant in the healthcare industry. So even with some of the other changes that have happened since then, they have not seen anything of of this magnitude, of this much change, and the change that needs to happen in many different facets. So we're talking about the people change, processes change, how we deliver care, et cetera. And I think that it's going to be a difficult, trying time, and this is really where you're going to see what the healthcare industry is made of. And we have some fantastic people in our healthcare industry.
And really, since 1965, managed care is probably the biggest blip that healthcare has faced as far as change. And what we have coming forward with the new healthcare plan is a larger magnitude. It's mm-hmm. going to take a lot more to get through this change, and it's upon us pretty quickly. These changes take place in 2014, and 2013 is, what, 20-something days away? So a lot to happen very quickly as it relates to the quality of care, mindset shift for the people. If you look at in the past, hospitals would celebrate when beds were full.
Mm-hmm.
Now with the focus on quality and improving patients' health, overall health, and being rated on the quality care that you're giving to improve health, would want to be celebrating now that the hospital beds are not full. So a huge mindset shift for the people and for the process that this is going to require.
Speaking of mindset shift, I found out something very interesting yesterday. You guys know Piedmont Hospital, right?
Absolutely.
Well, they've been buying up a bunch of private practices, and they are going to become an insurance company now.
I heard that.
So I find that very interesting, just everyone getting ready for this huge change. Their new revenue stream is going to be insurance. So
that's interesting. And you know what's really, you know, interesting, Kevin and Tim, as well, is that, you know, in other changes of this magnitude, people or businesses, right, and the healthcare industry is a business,
mm-hmm.
they either really, really focus on the processes, and we've got to have these great processes, we've got to be able to track, we've got to be able to trend, we've got to be able to have, you know, be able to report on these results, and they forget about the people side. In other businesses, they spend so much time on the people side that they don't put the good processes in place to help sustain that. And so this is really one of those prime examples of where neither is more important. They're symbiotic, and you've got to hit both at the same time.
And that's where your company comes in with strength, as I think. You've not dealt with healthcare per se, but you are really strong in understanding how to deal with change, help companies through that kind of mindset.
Exactly. When you look at a business like Peggy Sue just mentioned, there's so many similarities when you're facing change.
Mm-hmm.
It's really not about the business you're in, but how do you handle the change that you're facing, as well as from a project perspective, as well as change management and how you handle your people. If you think about what's facing the healthcare industry now, is we're going from a fee-for-service model to a quality-based payments,
mm-hmm.
which is huge. Our funding is going to be based on the quality, and not only are we providing quality care, but how do we prove that we're providing quality care, as well as tracking that and showing that. A lot of new systems have to be put in place, and then we have to have our people take ownership of these systems and deliver on them, because without the people delivering, it will not be successful, which comes to mind the mindset shift of how you see things now and how you handle your patients. It's now going to be a customer experience when you look at what choices people are going to have going forward in choosing their health care, and how well my doctor or my facility does in improving my health care.
And that kind of puts it squarely into the free enterprise perspective, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
The good survive.
You know, what's really interesting is that, and we're going to back up just a little bit from what Deborah said, because she's absolutely right. It's how the patients rate that care and the quality of the care. But if you back up a little bit, and let's talk a little bit more about how you get to that point where they can even rate you, part of the Affordable Care Act is the National Quality Strategy. And part of the National Quality Strategy is where you will actually get input from various stakeholders to come together and say, what are those quality measures? What are they? How do we measure them? And how do we report on them? And then those, in some cases, are directly tied to federal health care program funding. So when you measure quality, what are you measuring? is it meaningful? Does it make sense? Can you measure it? And can you measure it effectively? So as you look at the project piece of this leading up to, right, even how you even define quality, because quality to you, Tim, and quality to Deborah may be completely different than how I view quality in the care that I receive. So how do we set our healthcare organizations up for success? And it comes from some of that groundwork on how we even define a word such as quality. And there's many other examples out there like that. But these are the pieces that we specialize in helping with, right? And what's very different about CETA Inc., as you know, Tim, is not only do we come in on a strategic perspective and can help you and talk about those things, about how do you define quality, how do you do these things, but we also have a unique combination of talent where we actually help you to execute that. So where we don't come in and say, here's a great strategy, here's what we think you should do, and here's how you should do it, and here's a wonderful plan in this pretty little package all written out for you nice and neat. Now, how do I take that and operationalize it? Because it looks really good on paper, but how do I take that to the next level tactically and get my organization through this change? And that's really where we specialize. We'll help you on the strategic perspective. We will even partner with other organizations, perhaps, that you've brought in, because you want to get a wide range of expertise coming in and saying, how do we attack this problem the most efficient and effective way that we can? Because we can't do this twice, right? My funding is depending on this. But then when everyone else is sort of leaving the fold, right, and given all their bright ideas, who's going to be there to help you and lead you and to execute so that what you have at the end game is what you originally started with as part of your strategy? And that's where you see CETA Inc. coming in.
And what I would like to also talk about is what has happened in the past in other industries. For example, Peggy Sue and I have been through with the aviation industry. Many changes happen to aviation, like what's happening now in healthcare, with deregulation, with pushes for better quality to the passenger as far as communication and delays, as well as being on time and actually being fined if your airline does not arrive on time or they have a poor on-time performance. All of those things that happen in the aviation industry, which caused real struggles, and as you mentioned earlier, Tim, the good will survive. That's what we've seen in the airline industry, the ones that really took on the change early on and looked at changing their business model and looked at how do we hit these things that are coming. And the ones that haven't survived were the ones that didn't do a very good job of being proactive and heading off and being prepared for a lot of the things that happened with deregulation and the things that we've seen in the industry, as well as low-cost carriers and your legacy carriers, all those things. And you'll have similar things happening in the healthcare industry. You'll see, like you mentioned, Piedmont buying up a lot of practices and how they're changing. They're looking at changing their business model very quickly, where if others will delay in that, it'll be very painful for them to get through and survive.
What do you see your company having to do to make sure that you provide the best care, direction, coaching in this breaking area?
What is really important, and Peggy Sue mentioned it earlier, and we can't stress it enough, and we've seen it both ways. We've seen where projects begin when you're looking at changing your business model and you take on the project, manage it very well, and then bring the people in and say, this is what we're implementing, this is what we need from you.
Mm-hmm.
And we've also seen it where you bring them in together, the project, the processes, the procedures, building the systems along with the involvement of the people up front. Because your people, your frontline people, are such a valuable resource in how well initiatives that you put together. And also the mindset shifts and also a buy-in, taking ownership. And this is how we're changing our business model instead of we're changing our business model up here and you guys just need to deal with it. This is what we're going to do, whether it works or not. You may have been in organizations before where you've been that frontline employee and actually felt like, wow, who put this together? They don't really understand my job.
Right.
This is not going to work. And you know that mindset's there, and they'll show you it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They'll prove that it doesn't work, and that's right. Where their energy
no,
will go.
No, that would never happen, no. Right?
And I think what's really another value that CETA Inc. really brings when it comes to the coaching piece and how we sort of come in and help these organizations attack these issues and come out right on the other side is when you have consultants like us come in and we actually are working with you to execute the plan that we've put in place, we have opportunity for, you know, some real-time, hands-on collaborative coaching. So it's more than Deborah sitting here with Peggy Sue and saying, here's what you should do, and when this situation comes up, you may want to think about, and, you know, all those nice things that are great to hear when everything's calm and cool. But when you're there to help that organization and you're a part of that organization's team, getting them through and executing, when that comes up, I've got Deborah sitting next to me going, okay, here's another way to look at this as we get through this. What are your thoughts on this, what are your thoughts on this particular approach? Or here's a way how you could handle this situation that's a little differently than you might have in the past, and here's where that might take you. So that real-time coaching, hands-on while it's happening, is invaluable.
Well, how are you going to address the issue that we often hear, regardless of the industry? Well, that may work there, but it isn't going to work here. It may have worked in the airline industry, but this is the healthcare industry. Mm-hmm. What do you do with that?
I think that there is absolutely, and I want to make sure, and I want our listeners to hear this, is that the healthcare industry and all of its history and the people who have been with the healthcare industry for 30 and 40 years, they have expertise and knowledge that is absolutely valuable, that has to be honored and has to be taken into account as we develop this new way of doing business. And the things and the experience that we have and that we've brought and will bring into the healthcare industry, is it going to be exactly the same? Absolutely not. We don't come into a, here's our little box of how we do things, and here's our checklist of three or four things, and this has worked for everybody we've ever worked with. We say, here's sort of a starting point for us. How do we massage this in a way that's unique to not only your industry, but let's take that to another level. What this is needs to be tailored to what's unique to your industry, to your business, and then to your people, which is really important. No one strategy, although they may have some of the same fundamentals in place, how you execute it, and a lot of the tactical pieces change. And that's where our flexibility comes in. And I think that is a lot different than what some other people come in with their prepackaged ideas. It's always nice to have something to build off of course. But do we want to come into these organizations and say, well, absolutely, it worked in the airline industry. Of course it'll work here. That's not our mindset. And that's not what this industry needs either. They need fluidity. They need flexibility. And they need people who understand and respect the history that the healthcare industry brings and that expertise that's not only comes from their senior executive leadership, but their frontline people who've been there for 30 years. Because quite frankly, we can design in partnership with these healthcare organizations. We can design the best processes in the world. They can look fantastic. We can track them. We can trend them. We can measure them. We can report on them. And the fact is if unless it's partnered with people making those processes come alive, you might as well hang it up.
And really, to sum it up, is to respect and customize to the culture. Because really, every industry has its own culture, and to value that and to make sure that we are addressing not just the needs of a new business model, but how does that culture that's already well established work within that and make the changes to be successful in the new system.
I like that. That's what I've tried to do in all of my work, and especially now as I work with writers. You know, they can all go off to a bookstore and buy a how-to-write book and, you know, do it this way, do it this way, do it this way. And I like to approach it from the perspective of, tell me what your strengths and weaknesses are, and let's build around that.
Right.
And that's what you do in the corporate setting.
Absolutely.
It's really nice to hear. It sounds like you guys have the foresight to, even with all the fear, with all the legislative changes and all these blank spots on the legislators, right, the TBD, of how they're going to pay for it. You guys are looking ahead. You're looking ahead of that.
That little thing, right?
Yeah,
how are we going to pay for that?
Yeah. You guys are looking ahead, and you're designing systems that can adapt and work towards that. What would you think is the biggest challenge with your job in dealing with these clients and the fear?
Specifically in the healthcare industry?
Mm-hmm. Specifically in the healthcare industry.
I think, and Deborah, I think you can certainly speak to this much better than I can, but I think it really is resistance to change. It's the same old adage of what's wrong with what we're doing now.
Can't teach an old dog new tricks.
Yeah, and I think that that's a fear, but I also think that that's not necessarily the fear of those frontline people. I think it's a perception that perhaps some external people may have, and it may be true in some organizations, right? And you know, everything's a little bit different. But I think that, again, this comes back to paying respect and homage to the people that have been in those positions. They think things need to change, too. We've spoken to some of these frontline healthcare professionals, and they're like, change definitely needs to happen. But it needs to be a collaborative effort. And people need to ask me, you don't sit at this desk, Peggy Sue, for sometimes 10, 12, 14 hours a day. You don't deal in the emergency room situation, Peggy Sue, for 10 to 14 hours. So appreciate your expertise, and that's wonderful. But unless you have someone like me who sits in my chair and walks in my shoes, how do you really know what needs to be changed? Because I have some great ideas, because I've been here for 15 years. So when you talk about what's the biggest challenge, I think that it's when organizations such as ours come into a healthcare organization or a business, that making sure that you tie into each of their people from their senior executive leadership all the way down, because every one of them have expertise, and saying, here's some general things we see, poke holes into what we're saying. We don't take this personally. You know, I'm not tied to the strategy that I'm drafting. You're the one that's going to make it right. And I think that's going to be one of the biggest challenges, is those frontline people feeling comfortable enough and welcome enough to be able to have those types of open conversations and be open and honest and see some real change come from it.
And to add on to that, thinking about where we've come through and the airline industry and being involved in the changes that happened there, one of the first words that came to my mind when you asked that about challenges is overwhelmed. It's overwhelming, the magnitude of this and the impact it's going to have. And when you're in an industry that has to continue business and also make these changes at the same time, so if you think about it, we have to continue the current healthcare program and taking care of people, because there's still sick people out there as we're in the midst of these huge changes and transition. So I've got my job to keep things going, as well as I've got to implement a new system, learn a new system, and transition into that. So it's very overwhelming. And how do you face that with your people? You know, take a step back. We're going to have to look at this one day at a time, sometimes 1 hour at a time, but we have to try to work through that overwhelming, this is more than I can get through. And so you find that people, when they get to that point, they can almost shut down and become paralyzed. So how do you work through that to help people continue business as usual and look towards a transition in the future state as well?
And that is key, and that speaks exactly to what we do and what we do very, very well, which is the project side of that has got to be cadenced in such a way to support that change and that change in that mindset. So whereas my project plan, right, an MS project or whatever I decide to use, says I can start this program on October 1st and I can run with it, what has to be in that project plan, where we weave in the golden thread of change management through everything we do, is say, you know what, we're going to delay that for 2 weeks. It's not going to hurt us from a business perspective or a revenue perspective, because I can make up that time later on in the project possibly. But allowing that little bit of extra time to do X, Y, and Z for the change management piece is worth it. Will we get dividends from that? And that's really a prime example of where we see marrying the project management and the change management side, because it's not as simple as sticking a deadline on some project plan. It's taking in all the other considerations before you start triggering certain events.
And moving it at a pace that works, as opposed to a calendar that decrees.
Yes.
Now, I want to take a short pause. We never do commercial breaks, but this is kind of like a commercial break, simply for one of the two of you to share contact information. I can see people who are listening, whether live or download, saying, got to talk with Sita. How does that happen?
You can reach us at 678-744-7560, or you can email us at www.ceta-inc.com. And we'd love to hear from you.
And if you go to that website, go to the contact and send the email.
And that's under We Are Listening.
Good, good. Okay, where do we want to jump in now? Do you guys have Kevin and I have been throwing questions at you. We'll give you a chance to say, Tim, you've just asked us this question, and we're going to give you the answer. What would that question be?
Well, I think one of the questions would be, you know, and we talked a little bit about this, was you know, do you agree with the changes that are coming up with the Affordable Care Act? I mean, how does CETA Inc. feel about those changes? Are they reasonable changes? What's going to be the cost of those
mm-hmm.
changes?
Mm-hmm. And your answer is?
And our answer is. I think what's really important for people to understand is that we are not involved in the politics of this. We are not looking to come in and say, oh, great, we totally agree with this. We totally disagree with this. This is ridiculous. Who's going to pay for this? Or, of course, we're going to pay for this, and this is how we're going to do it. When organizations call us, the fact is that it's here. We have our administration in place. For the next 4 years, this is what will be. The change is here. It's now a matter of how are you going to deal with it. Our role and our job is to support you through that inevitable change.
Mm-hmm.
So we can help you with different strategies. We can come up with some ideas on how we can lead you through this change. But the change itself is not in question. So it's really important for people to understand that as we step into these organizations, we're not coming with a political agenda. We're not coming with, we want to see this fail because we don't believe in it. Or, you know, we're going to do everything we can to make it successful for political reasons.
Mm-hmm.
We want to make it successful for the success of your organization. So we don't want to get involved in those politics. That's not what we're here to do, and that's not going to help your organization, and it's actually going to create more strife within your organization. That's not what we do.
Would it be safe to say that regardless, let's say something happens 6, 8, 9 months from now, Supreme Court has another ruling and it's gone, or who knows what. Would it be safe to say that if companies start now, though, to be ready, that in the long run, it's going to benefit them from a pure business perspective?
Well, if you have streamlined processes and you have your people engaged and motivated and really behind your organization, how can that be wrong? Some of the best organizations and best performing organizations in the world are organizations who have people who are loyal, dedicated, energized, motivated, and no matter what the market hits them with, they're able to pull that company through. So will there be additional changes? I'm sure at some point in time. It's too much of a hot topic for there not to be some change somewhere at some point in time. But the fact is, if you can use this opportunity to listen to your people, put in more streamlined processes, why wouldn't you?
I would say that it's very beneficial to look at your business model, because many of the business models that are out there now have opportunities to look for better ways to face what's in the future. Whether there's changes or not in the healthcare plan that's out there now, the most important thing is to be open to looking at, are there things we need to change? Are there things, ways that we need to do business differently? And a big piece of it is engagement of your people.
Mm-hmm.
If I was in the healthcare business, I'd want to be able to say that my customer service is better than the next guy's customer service, that patients are happy when they leave, their health is improving, and maybe they're not making as many visits to my facility, but my goal is to improve the health of my customers and that they have a good experience. So looking at this and how we do business, and talking about Piedmont and what they're doing, they're looking at a different way of bringing in revenue and facing changes that are coming. That's very proactive. I don't see anything but benefit coming out of that.
Okay. Now, while you were both talking, this image came to me. Undercover Boss. Mm-hmm. And when I watched, and mm-hmm. I love watching
fantastic
that
show.
Consistent theme is management doesn't know. Executives don't understand. Do you run into that, and how do you deal with that?
It's funny that you would bring that up. I just recently had a conversation with someone in healthcare, and she is the administrative assistant to the C office. And the feedback that she gets a lot of times, because she spends time in the emergency room and with the frontline employees, is, you know, we're not seeing the CEO, the new CEO, like we saw him, the previous CEO. And yes, I will say without a doubt, oftentimes the further we move up, our focus changes and we don't really understand what is happening in the day-to-day operation. We get busy, We are focused on different things from a strategic standpoint, and a lot of times we lose the pulse of what's going on with our people and the service that we're providing out there. And I think it's really important that we take that time to stop and not talk to our people, but listen to our people and spend time with them, whether it's, you know, dropping in the emergency room or in a critical care unit or whatever that might be, or setting some time aside to actually have a conversation, a planned conversation, where you can find out what's going on in your world versus me telling you what I think is going on in your world. Because many times as executives, we spend time telling our people what we think is going on and what should go on and really have no idea of the true challenges that are being faced mm-hmm. in these situations and how they're being handled once they find themselves in these challenges.
And one of the things with that, Tim, I think that is just as critical is absolutely what Deborah said about being visible and listening more than you're talking. But there's another piece to that that I think gets missed a lot. And we recently had a client that this was the case where the CEO was very much, or the president of the organization was very much trying to be visible and be out there and talking and listening. But nothing came of what they told him. There was never, ever another feedback mechanism that said, you know what, I heard you, and based on your feedback, here are some things. Or we heard your feedback, that's not feasible at this time, and kind of here's high level why. But so people would go and they would see these, you know, senior level executives give this wonderful feedback, and then pretty soon they didn't give any feedback, even if you asked. They're completely shut down. And one of the main reasons is because what are you going to do with that feedback? So there's a level of integrity and honesty that needs to come in, and transparency that if you are going to take the time to be visible and you are going to take the time to listen, then you are then obligated to follow through with what you've heard. Because if not, you might as well not have listened in the first place. You've actually almost lost more credibility than not being there.
Because it's the old lip service.
It's total lip service. And so don't think your frontline employees don't know. It's a joke. It's in the, well, you know, John Smith is coming again, and he's going to do his little roundtable talk with all the employees. Yeah, well, you know, I'll be texting while he's talking. Let me know how it goes. I mean, they know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
I hear he's up for a promotion. This is part of his PR thing, right? And they know. Don't think your frontline employees don't know what's going on. So if you're looking just to do it, to just be visible and just say, look, I just want to hear you and see you, unless you're going to follow through and really do something with what your valuable employees have told you,
don't waste your time. Yeah.
And really that speaks follow through. We talked about that in September in our last interview. That's probably the place that we suffer the most in implementation for processes and procedures, as well as how we engage and support our people, is our follow through.
Mm-hmm.
Is that we miss that step. We have a lot of energy on the front end on implementation and delivery and getting new systems in place and talking a good game, but it's the follow through to make sure things are happening the way they should be happening. So that's going to be a big piece in the healthcare and the new system, is that there are checks and balances to make sure once these systems are implemented and you're making these transitions, that the people are able to actually perform against these metrics and these tracking and adjust your system. You talked about what are the changes going to be. A lot of the changes is going to be we put these things in place. Some of them are going to work and some of them may not work, because you've seen that in other industries as you put new systems and transition into the new world. Things look great on paper, but they may not always work once they're out there and being delivered. So you have to be, as an organization, willing to go back to the table and say, let's adjust this a little bit to make sure we're continuing to deliver and be ready for additional changes that are on the horizon, that we continue to improve our systems.
The sensitivity to the whole process.
Yeah, sensitivity.
And
make sure it's working for the people. Check in on the people. How's it working? What's not working? And not be defensive about it, because let's be honest, how many light bulbs did it take before it was like 900 tries before we actually had a light bulb? We have to be willing to continue to go back to the table, right?
And as Edison said, that was one more he didn't have to worry about. He kept finding new ones.
Absolutely, and you've got to understand that. And that goes right into really your show, Tim, is really about how do you then communicate that? How do you put that, you know, that you're listening, that you're going to be there, to how you're going to come back with what your feedback is and how you're going to implement what you've heard, or you know, how you're going to take that in, is what does that communication piece look like?
How do you handle that? Do you do an oral report? Do you give a written report? Do you do both?
We always do both. There's always the facts that need to go in the written report, but there's also some pieces and some nuances that are very appropriate to have face-to-face with the right person. The other thing that we do is that, you know, we work very closely. One of our partners in crime, per se, is a public relations and crisis management expert when it comes to communication. Hmm. And John Thatcher is our partner in crime with that, and that's his specialty. And so what he will do is he will come in with us and say, look, what does this internal and this external communication plan look like, right? Because as you're doing all of these things and you're keeping your frontline employees engaged and you want to keep them, you know, notified of everything that's going on and keep them updated, that's an internal communication plan. Especially if you have a change in executive staff, executive leadership, things of that nature. There's also, quite frankly, whether you like it or not, a PR strategy that needs to happen about that. What's better about you? What am I going to get different from you than I did from the last person, right? And then there's that external strategy, right? So, for example, completely to your point, Kevin, you know, when the Piedmont is making those announcements, so depending on how they make that announcement and what put in there gives the, you know, could have a different perception. For example, they could put out something in writing and makes me think, okay, so they don't want to focus on quality care because they really don't care about my care, so they're going to try to find another revenue stream because they don't want to lose money and they can't meet those standards. Or is it we want to have a more comprehensive approach to how we treat you to improve your quality of care? Depending on how that message is written, depends on how I now perceive Piedmont Hospital.
Very true. I'm really curious. I feel more confident now with companies like CETA Inc. that these systems are going to get worked out. All these changes is going to go. But I heard something really scary the other day. It sent up a red flag for me. We were talking to a doctor. He came in here. He comes from a family of doctors. His dad was a doctor, grandfather, and so on. And because of these changes, he's specifically telling his kids not to become doctors. He's saying it's not smart. You're not going to get a return on your investment. He cares about people, but he's just saying with all the red tape coming up, it's just not worth it. It's going to stress you out. It's not. What do you guys think about that? Do you think it's going to affect the industry 20 years down the road? Is that going to work itself out? Or I know it's a tough question.
No, it's not a tough question. I think it's a very realistic question. I think that's very interesting. I think that's his choice, and I think that it's important that as parents, which is a whole different conversation in another 12-hour show, right? As parents, we face different kinds of challenges, and we want the best for our children. I think what you're going to see, and just speaking just in generally, whether it's the healthcare organizations, whether you want to be an airline pilot, you want to be a hunter, whatever the case may be, the fact is you've got to do what you love and what makes you feel good. And the challenges that come with it, they're challenges, but you don't focus on them to the point that it takes away from the joy of being you. So with his children or whoever's children, you know, my thing to my son is, and he's only 4 years old, and he kind of looks at me kind of strangely at this point, but someday he'll get it, is, you know, I want you to get a great education. I want you to travel. You'll travel with me and your father. We'll do all these wonderful things together. What you choose after you've had that exposure is up to you. You can use that quality education to become a doctor, a lawyer, the next president of the United States. Whatever you want, we'll support you. If you want to live on the farm and be a huntsman and just be out there and just know that you've grown as a person as a result of that knowledge that you've obtained, you have just as much support from us as you did. The fact is you have a choice. Life is too short. Do what makes you happy. So if in the healthcare industry, will it be different? Yes. Will you probably get to being a doctor for different reasons than you did before? If that reason is primarily money driven, you might see a difference. But then again, there's nothing to say that this particular, you know, Affordable Care Act is still not going to reap you revenue. It's just coming in a different way and measured a different way.
I think when you hear comments like that, with change, there's a lot of fear of the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's overwhelming when you look at all of the aspects of this new plan. So with that, of course, there's going to be opinions on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
I think the most important thing is to know that I believe there's a lot of people in healthcare today that aren't in it for the return on investment. They have a passion for helping people and using the skills and knowledge and abilities that they've been given in that field.
Mm-hmm.
I also believe that there's a lot we don't know yet about how this is all going to play out and the changes that are going to happen. If you look at the overall plan, it's a transition 14 on mm-hmm. of how it's going to look. and what is going to be out there. So I think we have to sit back and not panic in that respect and make decisions like Peggy Sue based on what our passions are and what we want to do with our life and adjust as it happens. Because I would say in every industry we see out there, there have been changes in careers and the return on investment. Yeah. But you still see people out there going in all different professions because of their passions and what they want to see in their life. So
what motivates you to keep engaging in this kind of work?
I would say the bottom line is it gives me a great deal of reward to see people reach what we just talked about, to be the best that they can be, to be coached, to be passionate about what they do, to see the value they bring, the difference that they make, to see organizations begin to focus on the business as a business and the people coming together is what makes it a valuable proposition.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing success, whatever that looks like, large or small, see success, whether it's an individual success or a company's success, to see that come to fruition because of the work that all the individuals do to reach that.
Mm-hmm. You're smiling. You're laughing. We can't see it over the airwaves, but I can. Your turn. What keeps you going? What motivates you?
I love crisis situations.
Perfect.
I love chaos.
Well, let me tell you, you're about 8 years away from living it daily when your son hits 12.
I tell you, it is a sickness. And those out there with the same sickness that I have, you totally get it and are laughing yourselves, because I love going into these types of situations that are so chaotic. People are running in completely different directions. And it takes this, you know, the energy is so high. You know, the stress level for everyone else is so high, and they're freaking out, and they don't know what direction to go in, and they don't know how to take this chaos and break it down into bite-sized pieces, right? Something that's palatable. And then, you know, Deborah and I come in there, and we're able to do that for them, and you start to see that just, that release for them, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know? And yes, of course I love to see people grow. I definitely want to see that business successful, but the real thrill and the real high of it for me is coming into a sort of a state of chaos and leaving, and they are in such a completely different state, which is one of the reasons that I do what I do and don't work for just one corporation, is because you don't want a corporation in a constant state of flux or chaos. You don't want to go through, you know, these crises all the time. That's not good for business. That's not good for you as a person, as an individual. Mm-hmm. So one of the reasons that, you know, Deborah and I have partnered and we have, you know, a successful business is because I get to do this in a number of different industries and in different clients. But yeah, so compared to Deborah's very sweet, nice, wonderful answer about people and seeing them grow, and I'm sitting here laughing because I'm like, that's cute, but.
But they're both valid and they're yes. both needed, right?
That's why I love Deborah.
Should I have an aversion to her calling that cute? I'm not sure how I feel about that.
Let's think about that. Do I have to shift roles here and become the therapist and the peacemaker?
But, you know, and I'll tell you, that's really, and we say all of that in jest, but that's exactly, again, one of the strategic benefits that we bring when we come into an organization, and we talked about this in September, is that you have people in your organization who are, it's all about what they term the touchy-feely piece,
mm-hmm.
right? And let's get these people on board. And then you have the other half of your executive team going, it's about the processes. Chop heads, cut costs, and let's just do it this way. So when you bring someone like us in, that we have those two extremes, but as we put our strategies and lead our organizations through that, we've already taken these two perspectives into place mm-hmm. and found a nice, healthy balance. So that when organizations work with us, they find a confidant and a partner in one of us. And then by the time we leave them, they sort of see where we are and how we meet in the middle.
And how we work together.
And that's a strategic advantage for that organization. It shows, number one, the Peggy Sue's of the world, it's okay to have them on your board of directors or part of your executive team or your leadership team. People like Deborah, same thing. It's how do we work that together? Mm-hmm. Because that's the best outcome for your business.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with you on that. Not that that means a lot to you, but you speak to the whole spectrum
yes.
of employees. You know, I would probably gravitate towards you, Deborah, because you look serious, and I know you can smile and laugh and all that stuff. I've experienced that, but I'm going to listen when you speak. I'll listen to you.
You better.
I know. I know, but I might not listen as carefully.
Right.
But then if my younger son were in the room, he'd be hanging on your every word.
And the fact is it takes you and your younger son to make it a success.
Yes, it does.
So the fact that you may not listen to me as closely, I don't take personally.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you gravitate toward Deborah, better for the business. If your son gravitates toward me, better for the business. Because our job is to bring you together.
Well, you know what's happened? We've done it again.
Oh, my goodness.
As the click and click and clack, the Tappet brothers would say, I shouldn't say you've wasted a perfectly good hour. I think this has been an amazing three quarters of an hour. The clock is on us, though. Peggy Sue, how about you giving the contact information this time?
Absolutely. You can reach us via telephone at 678-744-7560 or via our website at www.ceda-inc. That's CEDA-inc.com.
Great. Well, the clock is on us, and we always welcome your comments and suggestions about our content and about our guests. If you would like to recommend a guest or be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let us know. Just send me an email at whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. Remember, if you're listening to the show and you have a question, send it to me at that same address. I'll pass it on. Let's see if we can't get an answer for you. Thank you, Kevin, for handling the controls.
Anytime. It's always a blast.
Great. And it was good to have both Deborah Tyler and Peggy Sue Marquez-Kelly of CEDA Inc. with us today.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you very much.
I'm looking forward to one of you calling me again and say it's time for round three. I hope that happens. Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. You can learn more about Right Choice Services at www.rightchoiceservices.com. And I hope you'll join us next week and tell your friends about the show. Send them an email. Invite them to listen live or to the downloads. Right Here, Right Now, broadcast live every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time at rightherewrightnow.businessradiox.com. The MP3 version will be available later today. I am Tim Morrison. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business right here, right now.